This is On Second Thought. I'm Adam Ragusa in for Celeste Headlee. Chicken is the most popular meat in America, and Georgia is the nation's top chicken producer. But chicken has undergone quite a change, going from backyard bird to billion-dollar industry. Author Maren McKenna joins us. Her new book is called Big Chicken. And no, it has nothing directly to do with that Marietta landmark of the same name. Rather, McKenna's book explores the complex and fascinating history of America's most popular meat bird, with special attention to the role that antibiotics have played in the chicken's transformation into the modern industrial superbird that we know today and is grown in massive quantities in Georgia. Maren McKenna, thanks for being on Second Thought.
Thanks for having me.
So when did antibiotics come into the picture with chickens?
Amazingly, right at the start of the antibiotic era. So we get the first drugs that make up what we think of now as antibiotics in the late 1940s. And right away, immediately, as people are saying, these are magic, they cure infections that have killed people in terrible ways, scientists are already trying to put antibiotics into the feed and water of animals in order to make them grow more quickly.
And what's wrong with that?
Well, there's nothing wrong with that if you're a livestock producer, because it made animals grow more rapidly or grow on a lesser amount of feed. And then as farming got more concentrated, it allowed people to put more and more animals into barns and feedlots and not have them at risk for disease. But once you get literally outside the animal, the antibiotic-resistant bacteria that are produced in the animal's guts because they're fed antibiotics in their feed and water move away from animals and move away from farms and have contributed to this worldwide burden of drug-resistant infections that is very, very serious. 700,000 people around the world, 23,000 in the United States, die of drug-resistant infections each year, and agriculture contributes to that.
And I gather one of the key distinctions here is chicken producers making routine use of antibiotics, not just giving them to animals or groups of animals that appear to be sick.
So there's nothing wrong with using antibiotics to make a sick animal well. That's what public health authorities all over the world want agriculture to get to just using antibiotics for that reason. But these historic uses that date back decades are using antibiotics in what's called subtherapeutic amounts. That's tiny, tiny doses to do this weight gain that's called growth promotion and also to do this preventive effect.
Okay. And what kind of quantities are we talking about? How much antibiotics is going into, well, my verb tenses there are a mess. Antibiotics, singular or plural? How do you treat it in your book?
I think of it as antibiotics, the category. So in the United States, in the most recent federal data, which lags by a couple of years, so this goes back to 2015, 34 million pounds a year of antibiotics are sold for use in livestock. That's approximately four times what we put into humans. But again, when we give antibiotics to humans, it's almost always just to cure an infection. And most of the use in agriculture has nothing to do with animals that actually are sick.
And explain a little bit more about what could happen through this, I think it's pretty clear from your tone of voice, in your view, excessive use of antibiotics in chicken.
Right. So what happens is, this is an unintended consequence of something that I think people mostly had good intentions for at the start, right? Using antibiotics and all the things that followed after it, that it triggered precision genetics, precision nutrition, it gave us the most efficient, most consistent, most inexpensive meat on the planet. But it also sent out into the wider world drug-resistant infections that either are carried on the meat that animals become when they're slaughtered, or that move away in manure, in groundwater, in storm runoff, in dust on the wind, on the feet of insects, and take both resistant bacteria and the genes that confer resistance out into the world very far away from farms, so that there are really large outbreaks of both drug-resistant foodborne illness, and also illnesses that have no apparent relationship to farms that are spreading because of this agricultural practice that we've had for decades.
Illnesses among humans, you mean?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Right. What about any potential impacts for the livestock industry itself? Could they be hurting themselves in the long term?
Well, that's possible. You know, the funny thing is that going back to the very beginning of this, the scientists who came up with this growth promotion thought that it had a kind of built-in fail-safe. They thought that if enough bacteria that were resistant sort of collected in animals, then the drugs would just stop working, and therefore they wouldn't have to worry about it. But in fact, while this has kept agriculture going for a really long time, livestock agriculture, consumers are turning away from it. And there's been a significant reform movement just in poultry, just in the United States, just in the past couple of years, because both individual parents and chefs and also really large buying systems like hospitals and school systems have started to say, we just don't want to spend our dollars on this anymore. So agriculture is kind of undermining its own market by insisting on clinging to this practice.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Maren McKenna, author of the new book, Big Chicken, the incredible story of how antibiotics created modern agriculture and changed the way the world eats. This antibiotic phenomenon that we're talking about, is this confined to poultry or do we see this in other meat animals?
No, we totally do. The fascinating thing about this history is that poultry, in a way, taught the rest of livestock agriculture how to misuse antibiotics. It's a story of chicken because chickens were the first animals to get growth promoters experimentally back in 1948. And within 5 years of that, American farmers were giving 500,000 pounds of antibiotics a year to their livestock. And now, of course, it's up in the millions of pounds. But pigs, the pig industry certainly uses lots of antibiotics. The cattle industry does. And as chicken starts to turn away from antibiotic use, as has been happening just in the past few years, we can hope that maybe it's going to teach that lesson to pig and cattle agriculture as it taught them to misuse antibiotics in the first place.
On what scale are we seeing the poultry industry turn away from antibiotics? Is it just happening at the sort of very highest level producers that are, you know, making things for fancy overpriced farmers markets, or are we seeing it across the real breadth of the industry?
So the fascinating thing is this really is an industry-wide phenomenon, and it's really, really recent, and it really starts when, in 2014, the chairman of Purdue Farms, the grandson of the founder, the son of the "It Takes a Tough Man to Make a Tender Chicken" guy, Frank Purdue, He calls a press conference in Washington, D.C. and says that his company is turning away from antibiotics. And now, 3 years later, they're almost 100% antibiotic free. So
really?
That's the fourth largest chicken company in the United States. And along with them, at the same time, one of the most significant food service companies in chicken, which is our own Chick-fil-A right here in Atlanta, also announced they were going antibiotic free. So while there'd always been small, beautiful green pastured farms that were growing very delicious birds that are very different from the big, modern, big-breasted, heavy broilers, those were kind of a niche product. And now the mass product is also becoming antibiotic free. And you can go into most supermarkets now and find a no antibiotics ever or raised without antibiotics label within what I guess you could call the brand portfolios of most, not all, of the major chicken producers in the U.S.
Yeah, I've noticed those labels when I go shopping, and I suppose maybe just because I'm cynical, it's occupational hazard of journalism, but I just sort of assume that I'm being subjected to greenwashing, that, you know, either the wording is tricky, like it will say raised without antibiotics, which could mean there somehow antibiotics are involved somewhere else in the production of that animal, or just that there's like other creepy stuff going on with that chicken that is entirely more gross than antibiotics.
So,
am I wrong to be cynical?
No, it's important that we interrogate the labels on the food we eat, and especially the labels on meat, because you're right. There's a lot of sort of fancy dancing when it comes to labels, labeling of meat. For instance, almost every package of chicken in the United States says raised without hormones and cage-free. Well, broilers were never put in cages, and it's completely illegal to give hormones to chickens. So there are these claims that people make that are kind of somewhat, you know, they need questioning. But I think that, in fact, even if the label language differs from brand to brand, the movement away from antibiotics really is a real thing. And it's worth supporting because not only is it better for the birds and better for agriculture, but it really is better for public health. It really does represent a significant change, a winding back of this historic mistake that meat agriculture made decades ago.
But antibiotic resistance, this idea that through overuse of antibiotics, whether in humans as medicine or in livestock, this idea that antibiotic resistance is going to eventually result in superbugs that are going to kill us all, it sort of strikes me as it's almost like It's almost like anthropogenic climate change in our discourse. It's this thing that this catastrophic thing that everyone is warned about by the experts, and yet it doesn't seem to materialize in our experience of everyday life most of the time. But it's happening, right?
It's really interesting to compare it to climate change for a couple of reasons. First, because it's such an overwhelming problem. And as you say, the predictions are so dire. And anything that any one person can do feels so inadequate in response. You know, it's like you're buying an LED light bulb while you're watching the polar bears drown. And also, it's like climate change because it's such a worldwide problem, and whatever we do here in the industrialized West is not necessarily going to affect what happens in the much larger markets of India and China and Brazil and the other developing economies. But in fact, those just as we can right now see the effects of climate change in things like the differences in storms and sea level rise and so forth, we can see the effects of widespread antibiotic resistance. I mean, just a few years ago, there was identified a new sort of superbug in China, resistant to the very last available antibiotic. This superbug is called MCR, and the antibiotic's called colistin. It was found in people, in pigs, and in retail pork. Well, that has now spread to more than 30 countries, and there have been cases recorded by the CDC in the United States. So as much as we think this big predicted thing is sort of hanging out there in the future and is not going to affect us yet, it's already here.
We're speaking to Maren McKenna, author of the new book, Big Chicken, The Incredible Story of How Antibiotics Created Modern Agriculture and Changed the Way the World Eats. Maren, how did you get onto this topic as a writer? You're here in Georgia, the epicenter of the industrial chicken biz. Is that how it happened?
So I actually wandered into this sort of sideways. I'm a science writer. I've always written about scary diseases. My last book was an attempt to tell the story of the emergence of antibiotic resistance worldwide by writing the biography of one organism, MRSA, which is drug-resistant staph. And in the process of doing that, I discovered that this statistic that really stopped me in my tracks, which was that in 1 year, in the year 2011, which is a year that the numbers line up well, we sold in the United States 4 times as many antibiotics for use in livestock as we did in humans. And I had just exited this milieu in which people were saying in medicine, we have to protect antibiotics, we have to conserve their power, we have to use them with great care. And I couldn't hold in my head that in the same place and time, we were also allowing farmers to buy antibiotics for animals that were not sick, over the counter, by the literal ton. I have on my desk at home a 2-pound bag of chlortetracycline that I bought over the internet, and no one asked me a single question about it.
Oh, my God. So where do you think the meat industry is heading in the United States? Are consumers absolutely addicted to having absurdly inexpensive meat? I mean, chicken costs nothing. It's absolutely crazy. Or do we think that eventually the market is going to come around to having better, more sustainably produced, but probably more expensive birds available as on the mass market?
So I hope that what's going to happen is there's going to be a spectrum. You know, for the people who really want the most sustainable meat, there are always going to be those beautiful green pastured farms that produce birds that are more like the birds our grandparents or great-grandparents would have eaten. But the movement of really big companies like Purdue and Tyson and so forth into the antibiotic-free space in meat agriculture means that prices are probably going to come down. Now, the birds won't necessarily be as sustainable. They won't be out on beautiful green fields. They'll probably still be in big, solid-walled barns. But those producers are showing that they can produce animals almost as cheaply as they always have, but without that extra public health risk of that antibiotic overlay. And if that's where we get to, if what we have is not all beautiful green smallholder farms, but we have inexpensively, consistently, safely produced meat that no longer provokes antibiotic resistance, that to me is a good, at least interim step in changing how we raise meat animals.
But certainly antibiotics aren't the only problems with the industrial chicken biz. I mean, everybody who drives through you know, the mountains in North Georgia and looking at those giant chicken coops along the side of the road, it's a little bit unsettling to me, at least when I do that drive. And I worry about how safe that production is. What are there other problems in how we raise chickens, totally apart from the question of animal cruelty?
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, I mean, my contention would be that antibiotics started the ball rolling on all the rest of this. And therefore, if we take antibiotics out of the mix, we'll start to dismantle the rest. But there are, as you say, the animal welfare problems of keeping birds in, you know, 25, 35,000 at a time in these football field length barns. There's the manure, the chicken litter that comes out of those barns, which washes off in storm runoff, for instance, and creates dead zones in places like the Chesapeake Bay, which, you know, the Delmarva Peninsula is the historic home before Georgia of where broiler production got started. If you live in the vicinity of a very large poultry or pig farm, researchers in North Carolina have shown you are at more risk of antibiotic-resistant bacteria. So there are all these problems that cluster around these very large animal farms that if we start taking antibiotics out of the mix, we probably will be able to unwind some of those. And some of the producers, like Purdue, for instance, have said very candidly that once they took out antibiotics, they realized they had to start looking at the welfare issues, too. They had to give their birds more space, give them light, change their diets, because that's what they needed to stimulate their immune systems in the absence of the drugs. So it could be the start of a broader reform.
It's fascinating. In our last minute here, Maren McKenna, do you eat chicken?
I do. In fact, the book starts and ends with scenes of me stuffing my face with delicious chicken because I wanted to make the point that it's possible to ask questions about meat production and want to change meat production and still be a meat eater, and I definitely am.
So what do you buy? What do you look for when you go to the store?
Well, it depends on how much money I've got in my budget at the time. If I want a really delicious pasture-raised bird, I look here in Georgia for something like White Oak Pastures, which is based in Bluffton, Georgia, down near Florida. If I'm sort of in the medium space in my budget, I go for Bell & Evans, which is an antibiotic-free indoor-raised bird, and sometimes even just Purdue.
That's Maren McKenna, author of the new book, Big Chicken. Thank you so much. Fascinating conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Just ahead, how one opulent home drove more responsible logging in the South. It's an interesting story. On Second Thought, I'm Adam Ragusea.